Howdy and welcome to Capital Talk, our weekly political analysis show. I'm Eric Whitney, filling in for Sally Mock this week. I'm joined by Lee Newspaper's Capital reporter Holly Michaels and University of Montana political science professor and Mansfield Center fellow Rob Saldine. There was some pretty big news out of Washington on Tuesday. The Senate passed a major public lands package. Montana's Republican Senator Steve Daine says this one was different.
It took public lands to bring divided government together. I think it's a testimony to who we are as Americans, the value we place on our public lands.
It's an interesting bite. I'd argue it took more than public lands to bring divided government together, since this public lands legislation was on the table last year and Congress didn't pass it. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But Rob, what's in the bill?
Well, Eric, it's the biggest conservation bill we've seen in a decade. It combines over 100 bills from across the country and packages them into a single bill that runs 662 pages, and it creates over a million new acres of wilderness, creates new national park units, expands several existing national parks, and so on. The big items of interest in Montana are the permanent withdrawal of mining claims in the Paradise Valley just north of Yellowstone and the permanent reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which takes money from offshore oil and gas drilling and directs it towards conservation. So those are the big ticket items for Montana, and they are quite significant.
That Yellowstone Gateway Protection Act you mentioned and the Land and Water Conservation Fund reauthorization, that's something that politicians have been talking about literally for years in Montana. On Tuesday, when this deal was announced, I asked Senator Tester why the bill that passed by a huge margin, it passed by 92-8, why they couldn't get that done last year.
I hope it didn't have anything to do with the fact that I was up for reelection, but it may have. I hope it didn't have anything to do with people stopping conservation because they don't like conservation, but it probably had something to do with it. In the end, a package was able to be put together that got momentum, and that's a big part of it. And the momentum was a bipartisan momentum.
Rob, what do you make of Senator Tester's comments there?
First, Tester seems to be raising the prospect that this package didn't get through in the last Congress because one presumes Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who controls the Senate agenda, didn't want to give him a win going into the election. And I guess that's possible. But on its face, this actually seems to be pretty much in keeping with the way these public land bills have been passed over the last decade or so. And that is, at the very end of a Congress, a whole bunch of bills from all over the country get cobbled together into one big package. And that gets voted on in the lame duck session. That is, after the election. That's exactly what happened last year, or appeared to be happening. But then we're told it didn't get voted on because the Senate ran out of time. Who knows what was going on behind the scenes? But this actually seems to me to be fairly consistent with how public land bills have been dealt with. The other thing that strikes me, just in Tester's comments, the whole bipartisan bit, and we saw that from him this week too, when it came to his comments about that committee he was on that put together the deal to avoid another government shutdown. It just seems to me he's really leaning into being that moderate Democrat. You know, here we are at the very beginning of his third term. That's become a much bigger part of his presentation of self as the years have gone by, right? Remember, when he first ran back in 2006, he ran as a real progressive. And there were a lot of people who saw his win in the primary against John Morrison as being an upset. Morrison was the guy who was running more in the Max Baucus moderate mold. And then when Tester got to D.C., there was a discernible difference between him and Baucus in terms of the people they surrounded themselves with and the way they carried themselves. Team Tester was definitely more progressive than Team Baucus. But Tester really does seem to be claiming that moderate Democrat slot in the Senate, and that's perhaps because that lane has become more open to him. As the National Party has moved left, he has come to be the real moderate, or at least one of the real moderates in the Senate, and with people like Claire McCaskill, the former Missouri senator, gone, there is a real opening there for him to become kind of the public face of that within the Senate, and of course that works well for him here at home, too.
He certainly didn't run anything like a progressive in 2018. I mean, his first campaign ad was touting all the bills that President Trump had signed and how he can work with President Trump. So, yeah, he's not the job tester of 2006.
We've seen that shift over the years. I think one of the other things we see now from Tester is he's doing a lot more media, national media, going on Rachel Maddow show. And, you know, he was on one of the Sunday morning shows recently.
Bill Maher.
And Bill Maher. And so that I think there is a space out there in the media universe for sure for that, the kind of face of the moderate Democrats in the Senate, and he does a good job of filling that.
Well, Holly, it's been a fairly quiet week in Helena. I think probably the most significant thing to happen was the release of this new analysis of the changes that Republicans say they want to make to Montana's Medicaid expansion. What is it that the Republicans are asking for, at least in the preliminary draft bills we've seen? And the GOP hasn't formally introduced their Medicaid expansion bill yet, right?
Yeah, so we have not seen a Republican version of this bill formally introduced. There is a Democratic version out there that continues expansion, and it does so without work requirements, which are sort of the main piece that's in this Republican draft that we're focusing on right now. And Representative Ed Buttrey, who's from Great Falls and is carrying this bill, has cautioned repeatedly that it's an early draft, it's still changing, so hard to make any definitive statements, but it looks like about 80 hours of activities a month that would be work could be met with things like volunteering, or if you're unable to work, there's other ways you can meet that hours requirement.
And work requirements have been something that Republicans have been asking for in Medicaid and Medicaid expansion for years. I know in 2015, when Senator Buttrey carried the bipartisan bill that enacted Medicaid expansion in Montana, he initially wanted work requirements. The federal government told him that that wasn't possible. And now with the Trump administration being more friendly to requiring Medicaid recipients to work, he's included that in his draft legislation. And one of the researchers at George Washington University who looked at the kinds of work requirements Senator Buttrey is calling for came up with an analysis of what that would mean in terms of enrollment.
We could see tens of thousands of people lose health insurance coverage. In total, around 31,000 to 43,000, somewhere on the order of a third to maybe 45%.
Buttrey said that his draft has changed since that February 5th version that the researchers used to do their estimations. Buttrey said that he thinks, you know, some people would lose coverage under his plan, but not as many as Democrats in this study seem to indicate. There's just not a lot of information at this point. What we will see once the bill is finally introduced is the legislature has their own process to go through and analyze what impacts a bill would have. And so that might give us another idea once we have specific language there.
We've heard from Senator Buttrey that he doesn't think that these work requirements are going to result in a huge number of people losing their access to Medicaid expansion benefits. But Republicans have been saying that they think there are too many people enrolled in Medicaid expansion. They would like to see Medicaid expansion, the number of people enrolled, significantly smaller. Right, Holly?
Yep. Republicans have said that for a long time, saying the program costs the state too much. And in 2015, estimates show that about 45,000 Montanans might enroll. We've seen now a little over 95,000. So the program is much larger than what was initially predicted.
So we've got this Democratic Medicaid expansion bill that says basically continue the status quo, but the Democrats don't want these work requirements. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking and Medicaid expansion will expire at the end of June unless lawmakers come up with a bill to expand it. I'm just curious how you see this playing out. Is Governor Bullock going to end up with a bill that has work requirements that he'd have to veto, or do you see the parties compromising? I just wonder what kind of final bill we're going to end up with.
We spoke with Governor Bullock this week, and he thinks that there's enough time to work with Republicans to reach some sort of compromise. Both the Democrat bill and then Buttrey's bill should have their initial hearing maybe March 9th or March 16th, which is right at the middle of the legislative session. Buttrey's made pretty clear that he wants to see those work requirements, which he calls community benefits, and Bullock's made pretty clear that he doesn't want them in the bill, so not quite sure how that will turn out.
You could end up in a situation where Bullock has a bill on his desk that's not what he wants, but that the alternative to not signing that might be that the expansion ends, right? And you could get into a kind of showdown over that. And Bullock would have to decide whether he wants to sign that bill that he doesn't want or let the thing expire. Of course, he could veto it and kind of try to play a game of chicken and force the Republicans to come back and pass pass an expansion that's more to his liking, because I think one thing that has become clear, I'm not sure that anyone really wants this thing to go down permanently.
Yeah, the Republicans we've spoken to have said they don't want to end Medicaid expansion, but they'd like to see some significant changes. So it's, there's going to have to be some horse trading to see how the parties can come together on that. Also happening in Helena, we're starting to see some bills show up related to child and family services. And this week, Republican Representative Eric Moore has a bill to address a problem he sees.
One thing that we've seen is a classic problem within the department is turnover within its child protective services, the people who care for the least among us.
Holly, what kind of legislation is Representative Moore proposing to deal with that turnover problem in the foster care system?
So Moore is looking at a bill that would create a program to help child protection specialists repay student loan debt. It would be up to $12,000. You would get about $3,000 after your first year of staying in that position, $4,000 after the second, and $5,000 after the third. That division has had a pretty big problem with both recruitment and turnover. They're at about a 30% turnover rate right now, which is actually down from what it's been in years past. And that's because those jobs are just really difficult. You're dealing with families and kids in crisis. You're dealing with people battling drug addiction, really long hours and high caseloads because of that worker turnover. We had one caseworker who testified who said that they had about 52 children on their caseload at a time.
Are you hearing about other bills related to child and family services?
Child and Family Services has had some scrutiny from the legislature and other advocacy groups about the record number of children that have been removed and placed into foster care. And a lawmaker wants to increase that threshold so there has to be the risk of bodily injury to actually remove a child. Some people with the division spoke up against that bill, saying that it might create situations where they'd need to leave a child in the home when there's still a risk to that child, though it might not be physical.
Also happening in Helena, or I guess not happening in Helena, is Governor Bullock, who's absent today because he's visiting Iowa. And earlier this week, he explained what it is he's doing there.
I think that people can learn from the way that we do things in Montana. And it may not be perfect, but government typically largely functions. So as I have on other trips, listen to folks sharing some of Montana's story, but that's really as far as it goes.
So, Rob, the governor is headed over to Iowa to help the folks there with some Montana solutions. What's your take on why he's in Iowa?
No offense to the Hawkeye State, but I don't think anyone travels to Iowa as much as Bullock unless they're running for president. These visits to Iowa and to New Hampshire, they serve a couple purposes. They help Bullock make connections and build support on the ground in the first state that holds the first nominating convention. But each of these trips also creates a whole cycle of news coverage, which keeps his name out there and in the mix. And he's been getting a lot of good press out of it.
One thing members of the media did ask him this week, Republicans who are being critical of it are questioning about staff time and who he's taking with him on those trips. So we did ask him about that. And he did clarify that, well, some of his staff are going, they're going on their own time, not on the state dime. So that's something that I think people have been wondering about.
One more thing that happened this week was on Monday, Secretary of State Corey Stapleton was fined $4,000 by the Commissioner of Political Practices. Rob, what happened there and what do you think is the significance?
So he announced his run for governor on official state letterhead, and there were some government email addresses in use with that as well. And, you know, you aren't supposed to do that. In the big scheme of transgressions, this is pretty low on the scale.
And he didn't really fight the conclusion by the Commissioner of Political Practices. He apologized and said it wouldn't happen again.
Well, it's pretty clear cut, right? You know, better to just kind of apologize and move on.
Well, I think that's all we have time for on this week on Capital Talk. I'd like to thank Lee Newspaper's Capital reporter Holly Michaels and University of Montana political science professor and Mansfield Center fellow Rob Saldine for joining us.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.